All right, so let's just orient ourselves here for a second. It is February 2026.
Firmly in the mid-20s now.
Yeah, firmly in the mid-20s, which is wild. And today, I want to do a deep dive into an industry that, honestly, you probably pass by on the highway every single day without even giving it a second thought.
I know I used to.
Right. You see the big tinted windows, the luggage bays underneath. Maybe you rode one to a band competition back in high school or a corporate retreat. We are talking about the motor coach industry, charter buses.
Which I know sounds incredibly niche right out of the gate. You listening to this might be thinking, why do I need a deep dive on diesel engines and 56 passenger seats?
That was literally my first thought when you pitched this. I was ready to just snooze. But then I actually started reading through the source material you shared.
The Drive Time Roundtable.
Yes, the Drive Time Roundtable. And it is a gathering of some serious heavy hitters in this space. You've got folks representing companies like TBN, TCON, Trobex Bus Service out in Minnesota, and the Starline Collection up in Seattle. And what they're describing in this discussion, it isn't just about buses.
Not at all.
Feels like a perfect macro case study for the entire economy right now.
It really is. When you peel back the layers of this specific industry, you basically see every major economic stressor of the last 5 years playing out in real time.
Right.
You've got the whole labor revolution, massive insurance spikes, the whole integration of AI into traditional blue-collar work, and this really, really vicious battle between family-owned small businesses and digital middlemen.
So the mission for this deep dive today is to really unpack how a very traditional, old-school industry is essentially being forced to modernize its entire culture, its pricing, its tech. Because, as one of the panelists put it so perfectly, and this phrase just stuck with me, hope is not a strategy.
Yeah, that line really anchors their whole conversation. We're looking back at these pivotal shifts these operators made in 2025 to even survive into 2026. And honestly, the biggest shift, the one that kind of dictates everything else they do, starts with the human element.
Let's start right there.
Yeah.
Because for the last, I don't know, 10 years, if you talk to anyone in trucking or logistics or transportation, the headline was always exactly the same:
The driver shortage.
the driver shortage. You simply couldn't find human beings to drive the vehicles.
Yeah, they call it the churn. That's the industry term for it. You hire someone, you spend all this money training them, getting them certified, and then they burn out. Or they leave for, 50 cents more an hour at some local Amazon delivery gig, and then you just start the whole process over. It was a total revolving door.
But in this drive time discussion, they highlight a massive pivot that really took hold around 2025. Jeff Rogers from TCON specifically talked about this. He said the mindset in the industry shifted from just filling a seat to shaping a team, which, okay, sounds a bit like corporate buzzword bingo, right? Shaping a team. But what does that actually mean on the ground for a bus company?
It's essentially a move from quantity to quality. Take Bethany Schubert, for example. She runs Trobex in Minnesota. During this panel, she dropped a statistic that frankly didn't even make sense to me at first glance. She said her company does almost no marketing for drivers anymore. Zero.
Which seems impossible. If the whole industry is screaming for drivers and you just stop marketing, don't you just run out of employees?
You would completely think so. But she realized that trying to outspend her competitors on help wanted ads or signing bonuses was just a losing game. So instead, she took all that energy and focused entirely on her internal culture.
Wow.
Yeah, she stopped saying, nobody wants to work these days, and started asking a much harder question. Why would anyone want to work here?
That's a huge mindset shift. So it wasn't a recruitment problem, it was a product problem. And the product was the job itself.
Exactly. They set out to build a safe culture and a professional community. They started treating their drivers more like airline pilots rather than just what they call steering wheel holders. And the result is wild. In an industry literally defined by a labor shortage, Trobex has a waiting list of people wanting to work there.
A waiting list.
Yeah.
That is incredible. And that distinction you just made between a pilot and a steering wheel holder, that's really interesting. It implies a level of respect and professional autonomy that maybe just wasn't there before.
And it requires real logistical support to back it up. Gladys Gillis from the Starline Collection out in Seattle took this concept a step further in the discussion. She talked about completely restructuring their HR process. She realized that her internal staff was just too distracted to handle new applicants properly.
Right, because you think about an operations depot, a bus breaks down, a driver calls in sick at 4 a.m., there's weather delays, it's chaos.
Exactly. So when a potential new driver called the office to apply,
they probably got put on hold forever. Or the person answering the phone was super stressed out and short with them.
Exactly what was happening. So Starline made this really strategic move to outsource the entire attract phase. They hired a third party whose only job is to find and screen applicants.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, because that way the internal managers at the bus company could focus 100% of their energy on the retain phase, actually taking care of the people once they were through the door.
That division of labor makes so much sense. You're outsourcing the headhunting so your team can focus on the heart hunting, essentially, building that loyalty.
That is a great way to put it. And this whole focus on retention leads right into what I thought was the real water cooler moment of the panel. They were kind of laughing about how back in 2016, if you mentioned the phrase work-life balance in a bus depot, you would have been laughed out of the room.
Oh, totally. Because it's a 24/7 on-demand industry.
Right.
The bus goes when the group wants to go. If the local high school football team plays away on a Friday night, guess what? You're driving on a Friday night.
Right. It used to be seen as a weakness. Like, oh, you want a Saturday off? You're in the wrong business, pal. But by 2026, these operators are realizing that protecting work-life balance isn't a perk anymore. It's a fundamental business necessity if you want to survive. Gladys made the point that drivers today just will not train their entire lives for the job anymore.
So let's play this out for the listener. Say a veteran driver has their grandchild soccer game on a Saturday morning. But the company just got a lucrative charter request that would pay really good money. What happens?
In the old days, management bullied the driver into taking the trip. They'd say, we need you. Take one for the team. Today. You decline the revenue. You literally park the bus. Because if you force that driver to miss that soccer game, they quit. And the cost of replacing them, the recruiting, the drug testing, the training, the licensing, is infinitely higher than whatever profit you were going to make on that one Saturday charter.
Man, that has got to be a hard pill to swallow for an old school business owner, though. Turning down cash on the table today just to save theoretical money tomorrow.
It really is. But that is the modernize or die reality they're facing. You protect the human or you lose the human.
Okay, so they are doing the hard work of fixing the internal culture. That is the good news here. But reading through this transcript, it really seems like while they are fixing up the house on the inside, there is this massive storm outside trying to tear it down.
Oh, yeah.
We need to talk about the brokers.
The invisible middleman? This was definitely the part of the roundtable where the temperature in the room went up significantly.
I was struck by the math they threw out here. They mentioned brokers securing prices 30% higher than what the actual operators are charging. Walk me through how this works, because on the surface, a broker just sounds like a travel agent, and travel agents have been around forever, right?
Right, but it's a bit more aggressive than a traditional travel agent model. So here's the scenario for you listening. Say you need a charter bus for your wedding. You go to Google, you type in charter bus rental near me, you click the very first link, which is some slick website, let's call it bookabus.com. You put in your itinerary, request a quote, and they email you back saying it'll be $1,300. You pay it with your credit card.
Okay. Sounds standard. I booked my bus.
But here's the catch. Bookabus.com doesn't actually own any buses.
Right.
They don't have a commercial insurance policy. They don't employ any drivers. They're just a website. So they take your $1,300, turn around, and call a local mom-and-pop bus operator, maybe even one of the companies on this panel, and they hire them to do the trip for $1,000. And the broker just quietly keeps that $300 spread.
So they are pocketing a 30% markup just for having good SEO on Google and making a phone call.
Exactly. And this is why the operators are absolutely furious. The broker is taking zero risk. They don't own the $750,000 vehicle that's depreciating every day. They don't pay the $100,000 annual insurance premium. If that bus blows a tire at 2 a.m. on the highway, the broker isn't the one scrambling to get a mechanic out there. The local operator carries 100% of the risk and the capital cost, but the digital middleman skims all the cream off the top.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second here, though. Isn't this just the Expedia or Travelocity model? Airlines pay fees to Travelocity to sell their tickets. Hotels do the same thing. Why is the bus industry any different?
That is exactly the comparison the panel brought up, but they pointed out a really crucial difference. When you buy a Delta Airlines ticket on Expedia, Delta is still setting the base price. Expedia might get a commission, but Delta ultimately controls their own yield and revenue. In the bus industry, the operators have completely lost control of the pricing. The brokers are dictating the terms because they have captured the consumer at the top of the funnel. They own the Google search, so they own the customer relationship.
And the customer has absolutely no idea, do they?
None at all. They cited polling data during the panel showing that most consumers firmly believe they are booking directly with the bus company. They don't realize there's this invisible middleman taking a massive cut until something goes wrong on the day of the trip, and they can't get a straight answer on who is actually supposed to be driving them.
Which leads perfectly to what they called the Surgeon General solution, which I thought was honestly hilarious, but also kind of showed how desperate the situation is.
It is desperate. They are proposing legislation that would require a mandatory transparency warning on these broker websites, literally like a health warning on a pack of cigarettes, something that says in big letters, "Warning, we do not own, operate, or maintain any of these vehicles."
Do you think that actually has any chance of happening? Or is that just the industry venting?
Legislatively, it's a huge uphill battle. The tech and broker lobbies are very well funded, but it really highlights how threatened these physical operators feel. They are just trying to break this digital illusion that the website is the bus company.
But here is the thing I fundamentally don't get about this whole dynamic. If the broker is able to successfully charge that bride $1,300 and she pays it happily, why doesn't the bus company just charge her $1,300 directly? Why are they quoting the broker $1,000 and letting them eat their lunch?
That right there is the million-dollar question, and they dug into this. It comes down to pricing psychology and culture. The panel argued that the bus industry is completely obsessed with what they call cost-plus math.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning an operator sits down with a calculator and says, okay, my diesel fuel for this trip costs this much, the driver's hourly wage is this much, the wear and tear on the tires is this much, so I'll take my costs and add a 10% margin. They are pricing entirely based on their own internal expenses.
Whereas the broker is pricing based on what?
Right.
What the market will bear.
Based on value, based on desire.
What?
The broker isn't looking at fuel costs. The broker asks, how bad does this person want this bus?
The Tuesday wedding concept they discussed. That was the perfect example of this.
Exactly. So imagine a bride is getting married on a Tuesday. The traditional bus operator looks at that and thinks, oh, Tuesday is a slow day for us. My buses are just sitting empty in the yard. My costs are covered. I'll charge less just to get the buses moving.
They discount it.
Right. But the broker looks at the same inquiry and thinks, it's her wedding day. She wants the best. She is terrified of her guest being stranded. I'm going to charge full premium price because she's buying certainty.
Yeah.
The bride doesn't care about the bus operator's Tuesday efficiency metrics. She highly values the service.
So the operators are essentially undercutting themselves because they feel guilty making a larger profit.
Yes, the panel explicitly talked about this. Operators feel this inherent guilt about raising prices on their local community. They fall into what industry groups call the Spader paradox.
The Spader paradox.
Yeah, named after a management group. It's the tendency for business owners to focus obsessively on cutting their costs to survive, rather than just raising their prices to match the actual value they are providing to the customer. The broker has zero guilt, so the broker captures that entire value gap.
That is a massive lesson for literally any business owner listening to this right now.
Yeah.
If you price based solely on your internal costs, you are completely ignoring your customer's willingness to pay.
And you are leaving margin on the table that you desperately, desperately need, especially when you look at the other major external threat they spent time on, which is the government.
Right. Let's pivot to the pencil factory analogy.
Yeah.
Because reading this section, it sounds like Uncle Sam isn't just acting as a regulator in this industry. The government is actually acting as a direct competitor.
This is a huge friction point. It's the battle over something called the charter rule. Basically, you have these public transit agencies, the city buses, that are heavily subsidized by taxpayer dollars. They are supposed to run fixed routes, you know, the number 5 bus running downtown all day.
Right.
Right.
But increasingly, these public transit agencies are dipping into the private charter market.
So the city bus is taking the local college football team to their away game.
Exactly. And Gladys Gillis used this pencil factory analogy to explain to lawmakers why this is so fundamentally unfair. Imagine you take your life savings and start a private pencil factory. You buy the wood, the graphite, the manufacturing machines, you pay corporate taxes. Then the government takes the tax dollars you just paid, builds a shiny new government pencil factory directly across the street, gives their pencils away for free or dirt cheap, and then looks at you and asks why your private business is struggling to compete.
It's a completely uneven playing field. The private bus operator has to generate a profit just to keep the lights on. The public agency just asks the city for a bigger grant next year if they run a deficit.
Exactly. But here is the twist, and this is the part of the panel where I thought they got incredibly honest and self-reflective.
Mm.
The transit agencies defend themselves by claiming they have to do this charter work because the private operators aren't responding to the requests. Wait, what do they mean? The private companies are just turning down the work.
Well, there is a federal process in place. If a public transit agency wants to do a private charter trip, they are legally required to check if a private company is willing and able to do it first. They have to send out a notice on a federal registry. If no private operator responds and claims the job, then the transit agency is allowed to take it.
And the private operators just aren't responding.
Many of them aren't. Because they are so bogged down working in their business, they are busy changing tires, driving buses themselves, dealing with payroll emergencies. They simply don't have the administrative time to check the federal registry emails. So the transit agency throws its hands up and says, look, we tried, we asked the private sector, no one wants the work, so we'll do it.
Wow. So it's partly an apathy problem on the side of the business owners?
It absolutely is. And Bethany Schubert delivered a quote during this segment that I think should be framed and pinned on every small business office wall in America. If we aren't at the table, we're on the menu.
Oof. If we aren't at the table, we're on the menu. That is strong.
It's a huge call to action. She was telling her peers, you cannot complain about unfair government competition if you aren't even showing up to the town hall meetings, registering on the federal lists, and actually sitting down with your local legislators to humanize your business.
It really seems like showing up is the recurring theme of this entire roundtable, whether it's showing up for your drivers to build a better culture or showing up politically to protect your market share.
Totally.
But let's talk about the cold, hard cash reality of all this. Because even if you fix your culture perfectly and you fight off the brokers and you handle the government, the financial barriers to entry in this industry right now sound absolutely insane.
It is a high capital, low margin nightmare if you don't run it perfectly. Let's just look at the physical assets. A brand new motor coach in 2026 costs roughly $750,000.
$750,000. For one single vehicle.
One vehicle.
And to be a real company, you need a whole fleet of them.
Right. Now add the insurance crisis. They mentioned operators getting quotes coming in at $100,000 per year per bus.
Wait, pause. Let me make sure I'm hearing that right. $100,000 a year just to insure one bus before you even put a drop of diesel in it or pay a driver.
Yes. The liability is massive. And here is the real kicker for the owners. Despite all this heavy capital investment, when these bus companies are eventually sold, they sell for a really low valuation multiple. The panel mentioned they typically sell for 3x to 5 by EBITDA.
For listeners who don't live in the finance and private equity world, explain why that 3x to 5x number matters so much. Because if I own a tech startup, I might sell it for 20 times or even 50 times my earnings, right?
Right. A software company has very low physical assets and massive digital scalability, so buyers pay a huge premium. A bus company has massive, highly expensive physical assets that depreciate every single day. They carry immense risk. I mean, one bad accident can literally bankrupt the company. And historically, they have low margins, so buyers will not pay a premium. You are grinding for pennies on the dollar.
Which brings up the KGS rule they talked about.
Yeah.
The cost of goods sold. What is the actual financial target an operator has to hit to make this math work?
Ideally, your direct operating costs the fuel, the drivers pay for that trip, the tire wear should be exactly 40% of the price you charge the customer.
Okay.
That leaves 60% of the revenue to cover that insane insurance bill, the monthly bus payment, your office overhead, and hopefully at the very end, a little bit of profit.
And what happens if your direct costs creep up to 60% or 70% of your price?
Then you are slowly going out of business. Mm. You are literally planning to fail. You can't just operate on a razor-thin margin and hope there's cash left in the bank account at the end of the year.
Which brings us right back to hope is not a strategy.
Exactly.
Jeff Rogers brought up a very specific timeline to hammer this home. He said, as of this panel, there are only 1,414 days left in the decade.
From early 2026? Yeah, he's putting a very real clock on it. He's warning these operators, stop looking for some magic silver bullet that is going to fix all your problems by this afternoon. You need a long-term strategy for where your company needs to be in 2030.
And reading between the lines, that survival strategy absolutely has to involve technology. But I was really refreshed to hear that they weren't just talking about using AI in that vague, hand-wavy way people do on LinkedIn, like just ask ChatGPT to write your marketing emails.
Oh, no.
They had really practical, specific examples of what they called agentic AI.
This was the coolest part of the tech discussion for me. Agentic AI basically refers to AI agents that can act completely autonomously to solve multi-step problems. The primary example they gave was booking hotel rooms.
Right, because charter drivers are constantly ending up in random cities and they need a place to sleep.
Exactly. In the old days, a human dispatcher back at the office had to call the Holiday Inn in Des Moines, ask for a manager, negotiate a corporate rate, fax over a credit card authorization form. It took 20 to 30 minutes per trip. Now, an agentic AI system knows the bus is arriving in Des Moines. It knows the company's negotiated hotel rates. It finds the available room, books it, pays for it, and just sends the confirmation text directly to the driver's phone. Zero human interaction required.
That saves an unbelievable amount of administrative time.
Huge savings. Then there's what they called wearable AI. Gladys described mechanics in their maintenance shops actually wearing smart glasses.
Kind of like that old Google Glass concept from years ago, but actually useful.
Specifically designed for industrial use, yeah. So a mechanic is looking at a complex brake assembly. Instead of walking across the huge shop to a computer terminal or flipping through a paper manual with greasy hands, the glasses literally overlay a tutorial video or the 3D schematics right onto their field of view while they work.
That sounds like something straight out of Iron Man.
It massively increases both speed and accuracy for repairs. And the third AI application they discussed was using it as a source of truth. This is all about profit protection. It uses AI to constantly cross-reference massive amounts of data. You take the ELD, the electronic logging device that tracks the bus's exact movements.
Sort of the black box of the bus.
Exactly. And the AI automatically compares that black box data against the driver's payroll data and the customer's invoice.
To catch what they called leakage.
Yeah, revenue leakage. Say a customer was quoted for a five-hour trip, but on the day of the event there's bad traffic, or the customer asks for an unplanned detour and the bus actually runs for 6.5 hours. In the past, a busy dispatcher might completely miss that discrepancy. They bill the customer for the original 5 hours, but they legally have to pay the driver for the 6.5 hours they worked. The company just loses that money.
But now the AI flags it automatically.
Instantly. It pops up and says, hey, you underbilled this trip by 90 minutes. Send an updated invoice. That is pure profit recovery. It's literally finding free money hidden in your own data.
It's amazing to see how this industry is just totally fracturing in real time.
Mm-hmm.
You have the people stubbornly clinging to the old ways, pen and paper dispatching, cost-plus pricing, just sitting around hoping the phone rings. And then you have these progressive operators using wearable smart glasses, autonomous AI booking agents, and culture-first hiring strategies.
That is the perfect summary of this whole deep dive.
Mm.
The industry is splitting right down the middle. On one side, you have the churn, the operators who treat their drivers like disposable commodities, who fear new technology, and who let the digital brokers dictate their value. They are basically in a race to the bottom.
And on the other side,
you have the intentional operators, the ones actively building a community culture so they never even have to post a job ad, the ones deploying AI to fiercely protect their profit margins, the ones who fundamentally understand that working on the business, the strategy, the development, the culture is so much more critical than just working in the business, constantly putting out daily fires.
It's a powerful lesson for anyone tuning in, honestly. Whether you own a fleet of buses, a local bakery, or a graphic design firm, the vital distinction between being an operator and being a true business owner.
And I think it brings us perfectly back to that really provocative thought about value and pricing.
Yeah, I really want to leave you, the listener, with this thought to chew on. Throughout this deep dive, we spent a lot of time criticizing those online brokers for marking up prices by 30%. We kind of framed it as them unfairly skimming or stealing that margin from the hardworking operators. But I want to flip that perspective around for a second.
Right. If a middleman can take your exact product, mark it up 30% higher than you do, and the customer is totally happy to pay that premium, is the market really broken? Or are you just vastly undervaluing your own worth?
That is a tough, tough question to look in the mirror and ask yourself as a business owner. Are you leaving 30% of your revenue on the table simply because you're afraid to ask for it?
It clearly suggests the value is already there. The customers see it. The brokers absolutely see it. The only person not seeing the full value of the service is the one actually providing it.
A huge thank you to the Drive Time team, Chris, Jeff, Bethany, and Gladys, for letting us peek into the hood of their industry. Because it turns out, the view from the driver's seat in 2026 is a whole lot more complex and honestly, a lot more exciting than we ever thought.
Absolutely. Drive safe out there.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.